Coach Eric here. Today we have Bernat Elias on the show. Bernat is a coach in Europe, particularly in Sweden, via Spain, where he learned how to coach and received his coaching education. Today we're going to be talking about the differences between the European and American game in relation and all things related to basketball, specifically the coaching development, the player development from youth through elite. And we'll get into a lot of different playing style differences as well, not just from the team level, but individual levels, the difference between the European and the American game. We'll also dive into a little bit what U.S. coaches can do to be successful if they do come over to the European side. And we'll also touch a little bit on Bernat's coaching philosophy. So, as always, sit back, relax, be ready to learn, you know, take notes if you feel the need to. But otherwise, you know, we're going to be having some fun here, so enjoy the show. Welcome to the Athletes on the Ride podcast. This is Coach Eric Figanski here. Today I'm joined by a friend of mine and a coach over in Sweden right now. He's developed in Spain as a coach and has also coached in Denmark and a couple other places. And so I'd like you to welcome my friend Bernat Elias. What's up, Bernat? How are you?
Hey, thank you very much. I'm good, Eric.
Good.
Good to hear you again.
Yeah, good. It's good to be able to finally get this connection going. For everyone else that doesn't know out there, we've spent about the past hour and 20 minutes trying to get some stuff going. We had a lot of technical difficulties, so we're really happy that we're able to start off here. So to give a brief background on Bernat. Bernat works for one of the premier clubs. He's an assistant coach for one of the premier clubs in Sweden for Södertälje. They won a lot of championships, including a championship last year. And you guys compete in, was it Euro or EuroLeague or something like that as well?
Last season we won the championship in Sweden, and we get the opportunity to make the first round in Champions League, FIBA Champions League, and then we won the first round against Balkan team in Bulgaria. And then we lost the second round against Giants, his team in Belgium, Amber. And afterwards, we participated in the FIBA Europe Cup competition, and we met a Russian team and a Romanian team and also a Bulgarian team as well.
Okay, so for the listeners that don't know what it's like over in Europe, basically what happens is they run their basketball leagues a lot like they do their soccer leagues. And so you'll have these tournaments throughout their you know, home country regular season. And depending upon how they participate in those tournaments, that's going to determine, you know, which level of international competition that you guys play at. And you have EuroLeague, Euro Cup, et cetera.
Exactly.
Kind of all the way down through.
This EuroLeague and EuroCup, that's organizations are coming from the EuroLeague organization. Yep. And then the Champions League and FIBA EuroCup are the organizations from FIBA, international basketball. So it's two different, we can say, levels and two different organizations that are according to organize this level competitions.
Okay, so which level is the highest? It's EuroLeague, right?
That's the highest is EuroLeague, exactly. Then it's EuroCup, and then it's Champions League and FIBA EuroCup. So four different ones.
Gotcha. Okay, so that's pretty key information for some of the listeners out there as well, because it is so much different over there than it is in the States. The States, you have, you know, you have the NBA and you have college. That's kind of how it works. And I know there's been, like, I'm trying to create some in-season tournaments, but, you know, who knows how that's going to go. But anyway, we're going to segue over a little bit to some of the things
and about how, you know, how you've been developed as a coach. Because I think one of the most interesting things in comparison to coaching in the United States is, you know, there's an actual education, you know, and we have another mutual friend, Miguel, who coaches in Spain. And mm-hmm. we had, was it Nemanja, who coaches down at SMU in the States now, but he's been, you know, throughout, you know, the former Yugoslavian territories and Spain and Denmark as well. So speak a little mm-hmm. bit to,
yeah, you know, so is, the first thing that we have to say is that in different countries, there are different situations to get this education about basketball.
Okay.
So it's not the same in all countries. In Spain, for example, we had three different levels plus the top coaching level. Okay. That we can say that is a degree. Mm-hmm. For example, in Sweden, don't exist that, and there are three different levels, but not with the same word
in, or intensity, extensiveness.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. 10 years ago, in 2010, I get this top coaching level degree in Spain. Mm-hmm. What it from September to May, basically, and the last 2 weeks is intense exams and, you know, presential work mm-hmm. where there are a lot of talks from ACB coaches mm-hmm. from, you know, and then there are a work as a group that you have mm-hmm. to do different works as a group, and then also there are individual stuff to do. All these together, mm-hmm. you have to, you know, to make a grade, and then if you do in the right way, then you have this top coaching level degree.
Okay, so from start to finish, how long does it take to be able to get that degree? How many years?
In Spain, for example, every time that you know that you had one level, you have to sign as an experienced coach. You have to sign. Yeah. I think it's 30 acts. You know, 30 games.
Okay.
When you signed, and then this is a copy where you will send to the Spanish Federation.
Okay.
So from level to level, it's 1 year, we can say, because 30 games, when you coach a team, it's more or less what you are doing per year.
Okay, so you have approximately 30 games per year, and each level is a year. So to be a quote unquote, master coach or whatever, you know, whatever mm-hmm. the last name is, that's about 3 years.
Four. Because plus the last one.
Plus the last, like, super intense year. That's what you were saying. And what he was speaking to, he said a little bit in that last year, you work a lot with the ACB coaches. The ACB is the top league in Spain. It's basically the NBA of Spain.
Yeah, the ACB is a top level in Spain. A lot of very good coaches. In Spain, we had a lot of Spanish coaches involved from that, but also from around Europe. And yes, what they basically do is some chats and some topics where, you know, they get experience and they speak about the pick and roll defense, for example, or they speak about the transition offense, how to build a transition offense, or how to keep developing our skills in low post and face-to-face with players from level 1 to level 4. All these things, you know, and then a lot of examples, a lot of conversations, questions, and active feedback.
Right. And I think that's all, like, really interesting, because in the States, it's very much, as you're developing, the typical, if you're going to coach at a high level, a very typical developmental path is, you know, in a lot of cases, not all the times, but in a lot of cases, you've had to play basketball at some point. So this is kind of one development path. It's like you play all the way through college. Once you get into college, or once you're done with your collegiate career, you know, some people decide to become a graduate assistant at the university they were just at, playing at, or they go to another university. They'll do a grad assistant year or two to get their master's degree. you know, and then from there they'll become an assistant coach somewhere. And then they kind of have to work up the ladder like that. There's no real official, you know, education like you're speaking about. And I know, for example, Team USA, they're working to change that, you know, over the past 4 or 5 years, they've created the gold certification, which provides some education to coaches. But it's very much, they give you materials if you want to learn. They want to make sure that you're safeguarded, that you have insurance, and that you have some basics on coaching and what you know, how to develop life skills and such. But as far as the X's and O's and how to teach the tactics and the different skills and things of that sort, you know, it's just not there. Which makes it very, very interesting, because going off of this topic a little bit, I feel as though, you know, there are a lot of coaches in America that want to come to Europe, but they're not necessarily looked at in the similar light, and vice versa. I think a lot of international coaches that do a real great job want to come to America, but they're looked down upon as well, because it's a different way of doing things. Is that how you feel as well?
Yes, I think that we are in a global world where right now it's possible that American coaches are coming to Europe or to Spain to make these studies. And also and also European coaches that wants to go to college or to the States and to listen other experiences and to listen other coaches. Because even if there are two different, we can say two different ways to work on the basketball skills and different mentalities. Everything is good. I mean, I can listen to American coaches where I will learn a lot from them, and probably opposite way from American to European. What I think is very important is to understand the rules, because how the rules are in European basketball, it's also one of the points to build your philosophy, your principles, how you think and how you teach basketball.
Right. And just as an example, the most common example I think we can use for the listeners is just the definition of traveling. I know when I played in Spain for a year, you know, those first few games, I mean, it was the most frustrating thing, because every time I touch the ball, you're called for a travel, and they've changed that rule. I mean, you have what's known as now like the zero step, and then the one step and the two step, and you didn't really have that before. And, you know, the zero step is that first initial, you know, contact with the ball, the 1 foot, you know, 1 or 2 feet that are on the ground, and then you have those other 2 feet that can hit, which allows you to help kind of balance. And go ahead.
Yeah, this rule, of course, affects, but this rule is from 1 year ago. And this rule will change also part of your development skills with the players individually, of course. But I'm talking more about general rules. Like in NBA is 12 minutes of 10. Here is 10 minutes of 10. About the timeouts, about the number of possessions.
Yes.
About the
timeouts is another key.
The seconds that you can stay in the zone area, in the stage is one kind of rules. In Europe is another rule. So,
So speak to that a little bit. What's, you know, because I've had my experiences there, but you know, what's when you're talking about timeouts and zones and the amount of time you can be in there, just educate the public a little bit of like, what is that difference? How do you make those changes? Like, what are those changes like?
I mean, for example, in Europe, where we had one timeout each quarter, except the we had two timeouts in the first half that we can use whenever we want. In the second half, we have three timeouts that we also can use whatever we want. So it means that maybe if in the first half we don't use any timeout because the things with the team, it's going well, then we can use two timeouts in the last minute, for example, or in the last 2 minutes, you know?
Right.
There are this new rule from last season where the last 2 minutes, now you have to decide where do you want the ball. If you want the ball in the outside court or in the defensive court, it's very important decision and could be a key decision. Depends what is the score and
what
do you want, you know?
Very interesting. So you can actually choose, hey, I want it in the backcourt, I want it in a half court, I want it underneath the basket.
Wow. If it's in the offensive court, is in sideline and you have 14 seconds. If it's in the defensive court, is in baseline and you have 24 seconds.
But you can choose if you want it in the defensive court or the offensive court when you call the timeout in the final 2 minutes.
Yes, the final 2 minutes. Wow. Only in the final 2 minutes.
Yeah, no, so, that's crazy. I didn't know that. Interesting. Yeah.
So this is a new rule, for example, that changed also. And we feel that in the European way, the coaches, we had more impact, we can say. Because these timeouts are really important. And you can see, for example, in EuroLeague, not in all the games, but in a lot of games where the result is 70-something, 80-something, it means that it's very difficult to score. The defense is very, very hard, and the teams are closing a lot of spaces. So it means that the timeouts, of course, are really important also, and can be one of the keys of the game.
Well, and the other big thing off of that, I mean, just generally that you might not even think of as much, and I know that for sure the listeners don't. Like in Spain, the only time, or not just in Spain, but in Europe, the only time you can call a timeout is during a dead ball. You know, you'll see in the States a lot, you know, people run in to get get a basketball in the middle of a play, they'll call a timeout.
Yeah.
And you can't do that in Europe. In Europe, and it forces players to make plays. You don't get these runs of timeout after timeout after timeout. Because they're more limited, first of all. Second of all, it has to be a dead ball, which I think makes it's really interesting because it forces the players to make plays.
Yeah, that's true. So there have to be a dead ball, and the referee have to make a, you know, have to stop the game and put his hand up. No? The thing it's common when the US players are coming to Europe for the first time, and the first year they are trying to call some time out in the middle of the game.
Yes.
It's really fun. This you can see that every year, no? That happens once in a while, and they don't know, so they have to learn during the game or the communication between coaches and players.
Right.
But yes, this is this rule, no, and this affects also to the game.
So what are some differences when you get to like some of the zone rules, zone or you know, how many seconds of the lane? How does that differ from?
Yeah, that's one of the rules that we had that we can use zone from the beginning of the game to the end. In this way, the zones that more use it are 2-3 and 3-2, but also you can use 1-3-1, you can use box and one to try to stop some player. When US players are coming for this experience that I had in the Nordic countries, they are not use it. So they don't really know what is a zone defense. The zone defense, you are defending an area. You are not defending the player. You are defending an area. What it means that sometimes you are going to defend two players, sometimes nobody. So, and this is a very important point where some American players, they never did before, and they have to learn from beginning.
Really, that's really interesting because, you know, some of the issues I'm involved with a lot of youth basketball here in the States. And, you know, one of the issues that we see is that we actually see coaches run too much zone, you know, and I think from like a, you know, a developmental standpoint, you know, I think it is very key when they're young to learn how to play man to man. And then as they develop those concepts, you know, how to be ball you man and how to jump to the ball and do those type of things. You know, how then you can transfer to, okay, let's play some zone defenses and so on and so forth. But it's interesting to hear that some Americans that are coming over and from the college game or whatever, and they come over there and they don't know how to play zone. That's Interesting. I would never thought of that, about that as well. Huh.
I think that the rules in college and the rules in NBA are different also.
Yeah, yeah. I believe they – so they have a defensive 3 seconds rule, mm-hmm. which I don't believe you have in Europe. So you can't have that big guy just sit out in the paint. They have to be able to get in, get out, get in, get out, that type of thing. That's really the biggest difference there. In college and high school, though, they don't have that rule. Yeah. Interesting. No, those are definitely other – those are new things that I had never known about in regards to, yeah, the zone not even being, you know, being the issue, being able to teach to American players, and then the new timeout rule. That's
There are three things in zone where you can when you can see immediately. One thing that you try to do when you put a zone is to change the rhythm of the game. Imagine that some team is scoring a lot of points against you and you want to change the rhythm. This is one objective. Right. The other one is try to force them to shoot more than play one-on-one against you. So you want that the other team shoot instead attacking the basket a lot and finishing closer to the rim and control the rebound. And the other thing is that is connected, of course, everything is connected, to create shots where they are not used to do it.
To shooting. Yeah. And, you know? And so that a lot of that's going to come down to your analytics, right? Like, I'm sure you guys are able to find, hey, this is where they like to shoot. This is, these other hot spots. These are their normal spots where they don't shoot very well from here. Let's get them to take shots in these areas. Yeah.
Yeah. It's coming about two things. One is a feeling, because as a coach is also, we have to feel where is our team and where is the other team. Sometimes the other team make a sub and they sub the best shooter on the team. And then it's a good moment to put a zone, for example. And in the other way, when you know, for example, in Sweden, we play four times against each other. When you know more and more the other team, the opponent, you know also what they are going to do against zone. So you can anticipate what is going to be the offense that they will do against you. And then you can take away some passes or some situations that they want to build.
We went down that rabbit hole a little bit. Let's backtrack a little bit and talk a little bit more about that education and that development. I'm glad we're able to go down those rules, because I think a lot of players that are coming over and coaches as well, they're really not aware of that. And it's really a huge learning curve. So that's one of the things that we can look into. But in regards to, let's kind of backtrack to that education. Let's speak to, that first year, second year, third year. What was the focus of each of those years when you were taking your education? What were kind of the key learning points? When did they have the theory? When did they have the on-court stuff? So on and so forth.
Well, I'm from Barcelona. He's the capital of Catalonia. Catalonia is 7.5. We are 7.5 million people. One of the areas more popular about basketball in Spain. Right. And this kind of 3 years development coaching, we do like this. In the first year, it's very basic, very basic, where you combine just one exam in the end, but. It's 2 weeks where you do some exercise, some drills, and is a coaching title where you can coach until 14 years old.
Okay.
Is the first year where the boys and girls they play in normal rules about basketball.
Yeah. Right.
FIBA rules. The second one is until under 18 level, and there are, we can say, more exercise and more kind of drills and more skills, and more experience, and also there are some clips and some videos and some, and then there are different. Different grades, that you have to study.
Okay.
The third one is until the last category, local category, before the Spanish senior level.
All right.
In Spain, there are four different ACB, LEB Gold, LEB Silver, and EBA League. And this is four different divisions.
Right.
And the top one, you can coach all levels.
Gotcha. Okay.
One of the differences that we can see is the progressions. In Spain, we like a lot to work in progression. It means right. that, for example, from 1 against 0, against 2, all the progressions that we will do in, for example, divide and pass offensively, or how to defend one-on-one actions to 2 on 2
right.
when the ball penetrates baseline or middle, and how we handle this.
Right. Yep. So everything from 1 on 0 to 1 on 1 to 2 on 0, 2 on 1, 2 on 2, et cetera, and then just all the kind of small details to build up those type of situations. Yep.
Yeah. Another thing that that we, or in Spain or in Catalonia, we are working a lot is about playing quick and fast, playing smart, and correcting details. So we try to correct as much details as possible. For example, if we start with the triple threat, how we put our right hand, our left hand, how we attack the basket, how we create advantage from the first dribble, how aggressive we are to create this advantage, how we keep this advantage, how we punish this advantage. And all details possible. So we can say that how much level you had as a coach, more details you should be able right. to work and to see from your players and to correct from your players.
Right. Right. And it's, I think that's, you know, and it's a progression for the kids as well, because as soon as you see they start to get some of those details down and they start to master them, I mean, you got to continue to move them along. I mean, you know, some things as you were speaking to some of that I was thinking of, you know, obviously with the triple threat stuff, you know, being able to rip low, be able to rip high, be able to rip at the waist, being able to do your jab steps and shot fakes and all those type of things. But then, yeah, learning as you're learning how to do that, how to read, hey, and when I do this, if this is what I'm, you know, this is what you're looking for when to know when you have the advantage, if you're in one-on-ones. Like, it's like from my end, what I've kind of been taught and what I've learned through a lot of self-experience and through a lot of conversations with coaches and other players, it's, you know, more than anything else, it's a game of the feet. You know, if your feet can get out of the defense's feet, you know, you have an angle, and then it's your responsibility to take advantage of that angle, and then maintain that advantage. You know, and to be able to, and once, because then once you do that, then you create that disadvantage. You get from a 1-on-1 to a 1-on-0, and then people collapse. It becomes a 5-on-4. You know, and then people are transitioning out to help out. You know, and that's where you get that ball movement, that those dominoes, so to speak, where it goes from one person to the next, and the ball just keeps moving, and it's, you know, it becomes a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, completely agree. We can put a easy situation to understand for the listeners. For example, a 3-on-3, where half court, where the ball is in the left side, and the other two players are creating a pin down action.
Right.
For example, in Spain, where this individual tactical part, so how we make the decisions in the right time and in the right moment. We would work a lot, for example, how the defender react in this pin down action.
Right.
You have to react and punish the defender. No? For example, he's following me in the pin down. I have to curl and attack the space and score. No? If he cut the pin down, I have to be able to receive the ball and shoot the ball. And if they switch, we have to punish the mismatch. No? For example, this is a clear situation where about the decision making, what it means that if you are working with an under 16 team and you are and you want to build the smart players, you have to stop the you have to stop the exercise and explain to them from the beginning. So it takes time, and you know, you cannot play for 15 minutes 3-on-3 actions just spin downs with no corrections or not
right
almost stopping the why, because then you cannot go to the game and say to the players, hey, we have to read the spin downs.
Right. No, I completely agree. And I see that stuff all the time, is you watch people in practices, and I go to a lot of practices, and it's just like the kids are playing. And then you see sometimes in games, like, no, we have to do it like this. It's like, yeah, but you know, in my philosophy, like if they don't do it in practice, there's no way it's going to happen in a game.
Exactly.
Like you're going to practice how you play, or you're going to play how you practice. And so you have, that attention to detail, and going off of what you're talking about, well, let's use that pin down example again. I think it's also super important for, you know, me, especially with the younger kids, to be able to play it at different tempos so they can see. Because a lot of times, they want to go so hard and they're running around like a chicken with their head cut off. It's like, hey, you know, depending on what their level is, sometimes the coach has to play the defense so they can feel the different types of defense if they're super young. And then if they're older, then what you do is, you know, you put the quote unquote dummy defense where maybe you run a series of, let's say, four possessions, right? So mm-hmm. in those four possessions, the defense can play you four different ways. You know, they can go under the screen, they can go over the screen, they can push through the screen, you know, whatever it's going to be, but you have to use each of those one time. And then the offensive player has to make the right read. And then over time you build up the speed with that. I think in a lot of ways, those type of attentions to details and that type of progression is missed. You know, a lot of times over here, it's just systems, play. It's not, you know, developing those small details to make real smart basketball players.
Yeah, yes, completely agree. This is one way to build, to mm-hmm. do like you say, for example, four times with four different type of defenses. You have to explain mm-hmm. how to do it. But for me, it's very important also that you play live.
Oh, so, for sure. Yeah.
Yes. So, even if we explain when you put a new thing, usually the players, they need time. They need time to adapt the situation, themselves, the speed, and the decisions. No? But when you can see that there are a minimum level where the team can play with these rules, then you have to play with the speed, put pressure on the players, and in the best way, but put pressure defensively and offensively to put the quality and the level of the practice higher.
Right. To keep it competitive. Yeah, for sure. I 100% agree. Because kids get really bored if it's just the same thing over and over, first of all. And second of all, it doesn't, you know, when you go at those slower speeds or the pre-scripted, you know, reads, you're not, that doesn't translate to games. I mean, you can do it that as much as you want in practice, but you're not going to get in the competitive standpoint. So, I think being able to go live then out of that. And normally, so let's talk to that just a little bit. So would you normally have all of that in one practice for one thing where you go, you know, 1-on-0 or one versus coach, one versus player with the four different possessions, and then one, you know, times four possessions live? Or would those be separate practices? How would you normally structure that?
Depends on the object. Mm-hmm. First, you have to. What I do is the object of the drill.
Oh, can you say that again? You're breaking up a little bit. I think you might have been moving the phone.
Oh, sorry. The objective of the drill. So the goal of the drill. For example, let's put pin down situations. Mm-hmm. How to read offensively, no? Then probably you have to explain two different types of defense. No?
Right.
Of course, you will also talk about how to screen. You know, we need a minimum level.
Yep.
About the how to screen and how to create advantage from the screen. If not, we cannot put this next level about how to read. First, we have to know how to screen.
Right.
Okay. Imagine that we have a team that they know how to screen, and we want to read that situations.
Mm-hmm.
Then one possibility could be like this, no? Could be we play 3-on-3 half court actions where as a defender you have to decide if you follow or if you can the screen. Only two decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And you as an offensive team, you have to make the right decision depending on the defense.
Right, so you limit the number of decisions that they can make. Hey, it's going to be one or the other because that's the other thing is you're into paralysis by analysis. If you give them four choices to do right away, then all of a sudden they have no idea. So be able to limit. Hey, it's one or the other.
Yeah, that's one of the examples.
Okay,
but like I said before, you should find a time during the drill, during the exercise, where you play live. Okay. Because like this, you will see two things.
Yep.
You will see how the talented players, they create and they understand very easy and very quick what you want, what is an example for the other players. And this is a very important point because these talented players, these quality players, they will make a difference and a quality on the drill and for the team. Same like in games. They will make this quality as well.
Right.
And then the other thing is that the players that cost more to play, the players that don't have the same quality, they arrive to a minimum level of competitiveness. Of competitiveness, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you want to arrive always 10, with this competing part, you will probably arrive to 8 to 10, or 9 to 10. Now I'm talking about intensity, you know? And this is important. Our intensity during practices and during exercise and during drills are very close to the game, because if not, you arrive in the game and you don't compete at the level that it should be.
Right. Okay. So going off of that, we were talking a little bit about the progressions in the pin down, but let's talk a little bit from a skill development path. You know, you get the certification for that first year, that second year, that third year, and fourth year. What are some key emphases for the skills kind of at each of those levels for the players?
Well, what I can explain a little bit is the difference that I saw with American players when they came to Europe. For example, about skills and individual technique.
Mm-hmm.
In general, the American players are really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking now in general.
Right.
Or they had some routines as a players. I'm talking more about senior players. They had some routines, individual routines, for prepare themselves to start good practice or good game.
Mm-hmm.
Or mentality. They had a very good mentality to, for example, to get the ball, the last possession or the last ball of the game or the last ball in the quarter to close the game, to close the quarter, to close the possession.
You're just talking about the American players and what you notice when they come over there and they're playing in general. Those are some of the things that you notice.
Yes, and I think this is important because compared to European players in general, of course, there are a lot of levels and a lot of players. Maybe we don't have the same skills level or background, you know, or these routines that I'm talking about, or this mentality. The American right. player had this mentality to, hey, give me the ball, I will decide the game.
Right.
Sometimes yeah. in Europe, we don't have that mentality, okay? But mm-hmm. in every way, and I'm talking more about Spain because I'm from Barcelona and I had this experience. I had a Lithuanian player, for example, in the team this year where we talk the same language, you know, but maybe in Romania they don't do the same. But what I can see is that this understanding of the game, so how to understand when you have to take the shot, how to understand how to read the situation and keep reading and keep playing from this advantage. All these things, the Spanish players are more used to do it from, you know, from young ages, 13, 14, 15 years old.
Right.
What it means that when they arrive to senior level, they know how to play. They know how to handle. It's not just play. What I'm trying to say is that if you analyze good shots and bad shots in one game, I will find more bad shots from this American player than from this European player. Why? Because the American player will shoot the ball in front of a guy that is contesting the shot, you know?
Right.
Three or four times easy.
Right.
And you have to explain to him that this is not a good shot, that we can find a better shot than this one after 5 seconds of possession. And right. and for him, is like, what do you mean? This is not a good shot. You know?
Yeah. So you have yeah.
And I'm talking about senior players and senior players with quality.
Right.
So
right.
you have to start from the beginning to explain why this shot is not good for the team and why we have to find a better shot in this mm-hmm. in the process.
Okay. So overall, I mean, when they're younger, you're really enforcing, hey, this is how you create the disadvantage, and then this is, you know, these are great shots, and this is, you know, this is what we're working for. So from a tactical standpoint, those type of things are very strongly emphasized from a young age. But let's, I mean, one of the things that stuck out to me in some of my other conversations with some other coaches from Spain is, you know, when you guys, as an example, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys don't introduce, for example, pick and roll until a little bit later, until they understand how to play one-on-one, until they understand, hey, I can dribble to my right, to my left, and finish both ways. But now that I can do that, you know, and I can learn how to create my own shot, create my own space, now we're going to introduce this thing. So speak to that. Like, when does that happen? You know, what things are you looking for before you introduce it? I mean, speak to that a little bit.
Yeah. So what the first thing that we want to introduce to a player of, for example, 13 years old is try to give to him a lot of skills with ball, without ball, how to pass, how to dribble, how to finish, how to read. It means that with the ball is simple to understand, but without the ball, how to create space for another player, how to make a good backdoor, how to make a good cut, how to receive in this cut and score, how to receive in this cut and keep playing and pass extra pass. So when you understand, for example, that there are a mismatch, even with 14 years old, you know, you don't need a screen, because what the screen is giving to me is that when I don't know how to create, then I'm using a screen.
Right.
You know, that's one of the first things that you teach when you introduce a screen. Why you use a screen? One of the goals is to create from the screener an advantage, because we cannot create advantage from the one-on-one. So that's why there are a lot of coaches and a lot of theories about that. When is the important moment to put for the first time screen action, okay? Mm-hmm. And it would be a lot of discussions if first we put screen aways or
ball screen,
or pick and rolls, ball screens, okay? Yeah. Depends of the age and depends of the level. For example, if you feel that all your players had a minimum level to play without ball, to understand the game, to understand the spacing, very important, right, to understand that we can play five open or four open and one inside, for example, and create from this ball inside, right, pass and cut, replays, etc., then you can start introducing screen aways. And probably we will put first screen aways than pick and rolls.
Right. Yeah.
Because the screen aways is connected to playing without ball.
Right.
So
right.
I pass one side and I go instead moving and switch position. Mm-hmm. Now I'm using a screen for my partner.
Gotcha. Yeah, and it's just really, I just found that really fascinating to hear when I was over there and playing and having some of those conversations, because, you know, in America right now, you know, you'll see a lot of times that, you know, second, third, fourth grade. So you're looking at what, 8, 9, 10 years old, where they're running just pick and roll exclusively. And of course that's going to work because kids don't know how to guard a screen and roll. Like they don't know what they're doing. And I think that when you're looking kind of long-term, that really puts them at a disadvantage, because then they don't know how to kind of do things on their own. It's a tactic to win, not a tactic to develop when they do it when they're young. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yes. I understand. It's a very good example. But of course, with 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, what you should work is a lot in fundamentals. So probably you're right. 80, 90% of the practices should be about fundamentals, how to dribble with one ball, with two balls, how to pass the ball in different situations, how to move without ball, a lot of coordination, a lot of, you know, defense staff, of course. Basic position, how to defense, how to stay in front of the ball, weak side, strong side, denying.
Right.
Working aggressivity as well. But I don't think that with 8, 9 years old, you should put a pick and roll. Like you say, they don't understand why they are using that.
Right. No, 100% agree. All right, so so we've talked a little bit of, you know, some of the differences you've seen with the Americans. We've talked about differences in development at different stages a bit. You know, let's talk a little bit more into your, you know, as
philosophy.
Yeah, into your philosophy, because I know for sure, like older coaches, you know, they have their philosophy. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it, and this is why we're going to do it. And everyone, you know, their philosophy a lot of times is dictated on their experiences and what they see as successful. So speak a little bit to, you know, what your philosophy is, how you've gone about creating it, and, you know, what things are you still kind of looking into. So starting off with, what is the philosophy? How did you go about creating it?
I will explain you my philosophy as a coach that could work from under 13 to senior level. Okay. The first point is hard work.
Right.
So the first things that I spoke with my players is to work very hard in every practice and every game. To be disciplined. Mm-hmm. So this is important. Spend a lot of hours to be better basketball player, to develop yourself, your abilities, your knowledge, you know, show your best version as a player or as a coach,
right,
and keep growing during the year about all these skills. So this is one first very important point. Mm-hmm. Another one for me is honesty. Mm-hmm. So be honest, be loyal to the team, commit the same way, like, you know, like we, the coaches, commit with the team, that the players right. commit as well, mm-hmm. express and say what you think, mm-hmm. With always with respect.
Right.
First, respect yourself, but also respect the opponents, respect the coaches, the referees, the people that is on the score sheet, to, you know.
Yep.
So everybody. And be yourself, be authentic as a person. Don't be somebody else, no?
Right.
So this honest part is for me also an important point. Another one is passion. Mm-hmm. So I like when I can see players that they show emotions on the floor.
Okay.
And probably this is connected, or because we had this culture in Spain where, you know, we show emotions is mm-hmm. natural for us and is connected to our mentality. Overcome obstacles during mm-hmm. the season, you know, mm-hmm. and this competitive mentality is in our DNA.
Right.
And I think should be like that, because when we want to build the best players, finally we are competing in our job and in our work. We will make better results, how more wins. So it's like that, and we have to live with that.
Right. So continue.
Let me finish. And then the last one is enjoy.
Okay.
Is enjoy the moment, mm-hmm. enjoy the practice, the games, enjoy our daily work, enjoy our effort on the court, but also enjoy how to come and, you know, and work every day together. Of course, if you lost by 20, you will not enjoy. And we can right. every day, every single day during the year, because this is not realistic. But I'm trying to say that also when you enjoy the way, it's more easy to success and to win and to arrive to your excellent, to your best point. So four ideas: hard work, honesty, passion, and enjoy.
Hard work, honesty,
that's my philosophy.
Passion, and enjoying. Yeah. And I think what sticks out that's a little bit different, something I want you to speak to a little bit more, when you're talking about showing emotion, you want them to show all the emotions. So you want to show them the joy, you want to show the anger, you want to show everything. Like when you're, whatever the feeling it is, you want it to be intense, and you want the group to show it, yeah?
Yes. And of course, we have to be smart.
Right.
I want that my players show emotions on the floor,
mm-hmm.
But we cannot push somebody in front of the referee because right. I'm angry. No, but yes, I prefer that the player is hungry and he demonstrates that he's hungry.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you have to respect.
Right. Yeah.
His teammate or myself, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, because a lot of the things you were speaking to, they remind me of, you know, a couple of John Wooden's books, as far as having the hard work and the discipline and, you know, the loyalty, the honesty, those type of things to build, you know, the pyramid of success, so to speak. But one of the things he actually, you know, speaks to is, in his book, from what I remember, is, you know, being able to have that emotional control. Whereas, you know, you're a little bit on the other side. You're like, no, show all the emotion. which is really interesting, where, you know, there's a lot of ways to do things and be successful at it.
What I'm saying, that control your emotions is good, is great. But what I'm trying to say is that this is connected about your honesty. If you don't show emotions, all of us will have emotions. And one day, for some reason, I will be sad. You know,
right?
Sometimes connected to the game from last game. Sometimes connected because personal situation. You know, but how more I know my players, and how more my players know me as a coach, it's better to build a great relationship because this is a teamwork. This is right. not with one player we will win a championship. Never.
Right.
But right. with the good perform from individual players together, we will win a championship.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's very interesting. Because you do get some people like, oh man, he shouldn't be doing it like this and so on and so forth. But you're like, no, I mean, this is what you're feeling, show it. And so I think that's a real interesting point of view that on my end, I haven't really necessarily thought of. I've kind of been more on the spectrum of, hey, you know, when you get into these situations, yeah, you want to be intense, but you know, along your lines, as far as being able to be respectful and not, you know, yelling at the refs and so on and so forth. But being able to show those emotions, but in the right way. And I think that's pretty good. Okay. So that's the philosophy. How did you go about developing that? Like how did those become some of the backbone pieces as far as hard work, discipline, you know, passion, enjoyment? How did those develop as your kind of key points that you consistently kind of harp onto your players?
Well, you have to develop from day one, but to develop from day one, your players will start knowing you as a coach because they, you know, they will follow you in a lot of different ways, day by day. But it's important that from the beginning, because this is probably a chat that you will make with your players, no? What is your philosophy,
right,
as a coach? Because we will see you every day, and they have to understand you, right, and you have to understand them. So one good point to start is showing your philosophy as a coach,
right,
and to your players, because like. Yes, and do what, how you are, mm-hmm, you know, simple like that. Of course, this hard work and discipline is very simple in one way to see. I mean, you know, as a coach, when your player is working hard or not.
Right.
You don't need to be a master. You know that.
Right.
Maybe you don't know the first day, but after 3 days, you will know.
Right.
The discipline is... you know, your discipline. There are coaches that, you know, they are very disciplined about, for example, how to put your how to start a exercise, for example.
Right.
Where are the positions? How to start and how to finish the drill? How we make these points, etc., mm-hmm, etc. No? And this discipline is connected to the game or to the game plan or to whatever, no?
Right.
So the discipline is everything connected. But what for me is very important is that you are doing this every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is the most difficult thing, because when you won 4 games in a row, everybody follow you. But when you lost 3 games in a row, then it's very difficult. But that's the moment where you don't change. You have to be yourself. You have to continue with your philosophy.
Right. You have to continue to enforce, like, hey, this is who we are. This is what we do. And this is why we do it. And just continue with that every day. Yeah. So so why did you choose these pieces as your philosophy? Why do you believe, you know, these are the most important, and why, you know, and what did you do? You know, what experiences led you to believe, like, you know, this is what we have to be able to do to be successful.
Like you say, because my experience, that's the word, no? So you,
yeah, experience. Mm-hmm.
I am the person that I am because my experience, and from good and bad experiences. But then you build some priorities, and these priorities that you build is because, mm-hmm, the last years, how it was with me, this hard work is not negotiable. We have to work hard. We have to be honest. For me, be honest is very important, because if some player don't, you know, don't say the honest things with me, then I cannot get confidence with this player.
Right.
And then we will lost the connection, and we will lost perform.
Mm-hmm.
And also enjoying is part of my life, you know, that if not, what we do that.
Right. That's
what we come every day.
Exactly. The Catalan mentality, man. Got to enjoy it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If we don't enjoy to play or to coach basketball, do other things. But if we are here, then enjoy what we do.
Right. Exactly. So speak to, all right, so transitioning off of the philosophy into some of the experiences that you've had. You know, you've coached in Denmark, you've coached in different parts of Sweden and different parts of Denmark. Talk to a little bit of, you know, the stylistic differences, the coaches coaching differences, because because you played, like I said, you played under Miguel, you played under an American coach in Stevensgale, you played, then you were the head coach in Alvik, I was, and then you're under another coach there at Södertälje. So what are some stylistic differences that you've seen, and what have you kind of taken away from each situation, some key points from each year and you're in Svendborg as well, but some key points that you've taken away from each year that have kind of, you know, created these experiences to create these philosophies and the way you think and the way you do things. So, what are some experiences that have, that from each year that you've taken away that have helped develop who you are?
Yeah. During these 6 years, yes, I've been with, different coaches from different countries. First year with a Spanish coach, Miguel, then Mickey Dennis from US, mm-hmm. Ex-player, and his second year as a head coach. Then Arnar Gudjonsson in Svendborg from Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
After my year as a head coach with Lude de Gernas, that is from Sweden. So the first thing is that with all these kind of coaches, the visions, the methodologies, the influences, or, you know, the plannings from them are different.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is very interesting is that you can catch the best things from each one.
Exactly.
To put in your background and in your experience and how you build your, you know, your philosophy also and your character and your coaching life.
Right.
Because all of them, from the first to the last one, all of them, they had good points.
Right.
What I can say is that, for example, I feel very, very comfortable with Lude in Södertälje.
Okay.
It's 2 years with him. It's been great to work together. But all of them, they had good methodologies. In some things, for example, I remember Miguel that he works a lot about the spacing,
right?
And he was great on that.
Right.
So how to beat just to create advantage and keep playing from that. No?
Yeah.
I learned a lot also from AG, from Arnar Gudjonsson from Iceland. He was assistant coach in Iceland at that time.
Yeah.
And they were twice in in the European with his national team.
Right.
And with him, for example, I learned a lot about switching, how the national team in Iceland, they switch, mm-hmm. and they defense these situations and how to build the defense from switches. No?
Right.
I didn't see that before. So I put this in my background as well. From Lude, Lude came from Vedran Bosnić. He was assistant for 7 years in a row. And Vedran Bosnić,
for those that don't
know, is a Bosnian coach.
He's a big coach over there in Europe. He's big time.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it means that a lot of, you know, system offensively, but also defensively, how to defense the pick and roll, how to adjust some situations, how to create, how to be very strict in some things.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, so it's connected about the style, how we play right now.
Right.
Yeah. And all these things together finally became a good point to, you know, to keep putting in my back.
Right. And I mean, we spoke with a former player of his over in Södertälje, Skyler Bolin, who's in he's in top league Germany right now in Bundesliga for Würzburg. And you know, he was saying something very similar as far as the coach up in Södertälje, how detail oriented it is, and it's he learned, you know, just so much off of pick and roll and just knowing exactly where the passes are going to be and exactly where, you know, you're going to create the advantage and disadvantage. Would you be able to speak to that a little bit more as far as, you know, some of those kind of points when you guys were talking, when you, you know, both offensive and defensively around the pick and roll, some of the things that just kind of jumped out at you that were like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. Yeah. This works well.
Yeah. This is one way to plan your practices or mm-hmm. to plan your game plan, no? Mm-hmm. How the other team is defending the pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
So it means anticipate they will do this in the pick and roll situations because we are a pick and roll team.
Mm-hmm.
It means that when we play this and this and these situations, we have to read and do this and this in offense.
Right. No? Right.
The advantage is going to be here on this pass, and we have to attack here, and we have to read this mismatch, and we have to do that.
Right.
So it's very clear where is going to come the situation where you will attack or you will shoot or you will punish the defense right. from them.
Right.
And same in the other way, no? How to, okay, if we start making, because also, you know, that in pick and roll defense, we had five or six different type of defense, the pick and roll, and right. not every game we do exactly the same.
Right. Yep.
So let's say that we hedge mm-hmm. or we show a back or we switch.
Right.
Or we
ice.
You know, or yeah, we take
exactly.
a summer screen, whatever. Mm-hmm. Then in this situation we will do this, in this situation we will do push and under, and they will
right.
okay, then we give this shot.
Right.
That's what we are giving this kind of shot, but this shot we will never give,
right?
Because this shot, they are very dangerous, they are very good, and we want to take away this.
Yeah, exactly.
So we force the other team to arrive in a specific situation where we want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want this person to shoot, or we want this area to shoot, or this type of situation where mm-hmm. they're not the most comfortable. You know, they're here. Make an X percentage amount of shots. If they shoot it from here, it's lower, so this gives us the advantage, that type of thing.
Exactly. For example, I can put a specific example. When when you are aggressive in the pick and roll actions, whether other teams they can find is a pocket pass or a pick and pop situation.
Mm-hmm.
When it's a pocket pass, usually the big guys, they are shooting from the top of the key.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, in some games, we decide, okay, they can shoot from here, they're big guys. And we feel, and after watching a lot of time this opponent, that they will not win the game from these shots. You know what I mean? So right. they can score two or three or four during the game, but they will not win.
Right.
They will win in transition offense or in taking a lot of threes after we lost the ball, or, you know,
right.
or with this player or with that situation, but not like this.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, that's definitely, as you go to higher levels, that's what you have to do. You're not going to be able to take away everything, but if you know that you give them a certain shot consistently, you know, you're going to have a better chance of pulling out the win. Yeah. So one other thing I wanted to speak to before we get going here, we've been going for about an hour and 15 almost. What's, you know, your role as an assistant coach? Can you like so two things I wanted to cover. What has your role been, and how has it changed kind of between each of your situations? And then I'll have another question to follow up after that in regards to Force Some America.
This is something also to talk in the beginning of the season with the coaches, but also is something that can change during the season.
Okay.
It means that, for example, obviously my first year as a pro with no experience before with a senior professional team, I didn't have the same role and the same, you know, voice in the team that right now. Right now, I think that we had in a very good co-coaching part with Lude, where he's involved and he's of course the first coach on the team and responsible about a lot of things, but I get other responsibilities also very important.
Okay.
As well, for example, he gave me part about zone defense. He gave me part about, of course, scouting from the other team. These clips from the other team individually and as a and as a team. We talk about that together. We decide which clips we show to the players. Then also about plays and sets for us, which sets we can use in the last seconds of possessions.
Right.
So I had different roles also about offensive rebounds. We had this triangle rebound after every shot connected to the defensive transition. And I was very involved with this situation.
Speaking to offensive rebounding, it's just about getting people into the right spots for where the shot it might most likely miss. Is that what you're speaking about?
Well, we can make another another conversation about that because it's sure. More longer than
not a problem. But you were
involved you in think, right?
rebounding. Yeah, you're involved with offense.
But it's to find the balance between after your shot about who is going to the offensive rebound and who is running back.
Right. Yeah, that can be a whole nother
basically,
conversation.
Yeah. Definitely. But like I said, no, I think that is important that you feel part of the team, and to feel part of the team, I like how I feel right now because Lude gives me a lot of responsibility.
Right.
And this I really like. What I will never like is that I'm a cone close to the head coach and I'm not doing anything more than clips, for example.
Right. Right. Exactly.
But of course, my experience right now is not the same like 6 years ago. So
right.
Yeah. It's also a process.
It is. It is. And so, final question: if you had any advice to give to coaches, especially American coaches that want to come and they want to coach overseas, whether that be in Spain or Sweden or Germany or wherever, what advice would you give them to give them a, you know, better opportunity or help them get the foot in the door? Like what are some things that they should try to do? Or what things should they be ready for? Or how can they, you know, put themselves in a better light where, you know, people will, you know, look for them to do some coaching. What are your thoughts?
They have to be ready to open their mind about more tactical situations.
Okay.
Because I think that American coaches in general, they are very good in skills to give good skills to the players, to create a very, very good individual player, like, you know, like good shooter, like good, they are doing very good crossovers, for example, to create one-on-one, to use their bodies to finish or how to defend full court or all these things, no? On the ball. I think that they will see very interesting points about how to build a defense full court, for example, or how to build a defense half court with all players and with different situations. Mm-hmm. And the tactical part and the strategic part, I think, is also a point to see from the European vision.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, if they have opportunity to come, I think that it's very positive for them to see another kind of basketball.
100%. Because
there are coaches in Europe like David Blatt,
right?
That he went in Europe for a lot of years. He went to NBA,
mm-hmm.
and then he came back to Europe. Now is Scariolo. Sergio Scariolo is there, mm-hmm. the head coach in the national team in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of examples, no? But not a lot of American coaches can adapt themselves to the European style.
Right.
And also the opposite way. So not all the European coaches are ready to go to the States and success.
Right.
Because, like we spoke in the beginning of the conversation, the rules affects, the history of basketball affects,
mm-hmm.
and your background affects as well.
Right.
So it's not the same that Messina, Ettore Messina, tried to, you know, to coach. He coached in NBA for a lot of years, and he feel maybe very comfortable, and you know, he was there as assistant coach for many years,
mm-hmm.
and now he came back to Europe, right. EuroLeague, high level, and nothing happened. That maybe other coaches, that they will never go to the States.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because their style, or because their personality, or because, for example, I can see Jessica Vicious, that probably in the future he can go to the NBA. But I cannot see Obradovic, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, yeah, because Messina was under Popovic, right? I believe over at mm-hmm. San Antonio, he was there for a while, and then he just came back.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, thought so. Okay, cool. Well, are there any other things you want to speak to? You know, I think we put together a pretty good conversation to highlight some of the differences between not just the styles of play, but the actual differences in play between, you know, European basketball and America, and you know, how things are developed there differently, not just from a player point of view, but from a coaching point of view. You know, any other things you want to touch on, or should we just save that for another conversation? What do you think?
But it was very interesting to make this podcast together, Eric, and if the people had interest to talk with me, you can share my
information,
my personal email.
Okay.
Or my information.
Okay.
Or my IG, Instagram,
yep.
to follow me or whatever.
What is that?
What do you want to know?
Your Instagram. What's your Instagram handle?
Instagram is at Bernovic, the first with B.
Mm-hmm.
Berno Beach, okay. B E R N O V I C 15.
Okay. So B E R N O V I C 15.
Yes.
Got it. Awesome. So for everyone out there, if you want to look up Bernat and you got questions for him or want to speak with him a little bit more, you'll be able to find him there on Instagram. I won't give out his personal email, but if you want to reach out to me, I can send you out his email as well. But Instagram should be a pretty good platform to get a hold of him. Well, yeah. Thank you very much for your time, Bernat. Much appreciated. I hope
okay.
Everybody
welcome.
Enjoys it. And yeah, we'll be in touch.